Georgian, that blew my mind. I saw what I'd only been used to seeing in these kind of aid adverts about help, you know, a child in a developing economy. There was no electricity. There were corrugated kind of roofs, almost like the radiators you see in some homes that were used for roofs. There were in some places there were no doors and no windows to the homes. It was all kind of subsistence farming, so there was no commercial activity. It was just you grow stuff, you eat the stuff you grow, and you survive. And you know, kids would be running around. Everyone's kind of, a lot of people were barefooted. School was, you know, the older lady in the village sitting them down and taking them through some stuff. Of course, there was no internet. That was the first time I experienced upset about the lack of gratitude I had in my life, actually. I was more upset with myself than I was with them because they were so happy. And I thought, I said a lot of swear words to myself about myself because I was sometimes short, rude, dismissive, childish, immature with my father, who came out with me for those few weeks. And once I saw where he'd come from, because this was his village, he moved when he was 15. And at that time he was, you know, in his 40s or something. So I thought, Jesus, and you were here 20 years before I even got to this place. And this is where he was raised. And yeah, even now looking back on it, it taught me a lot about gratitude, because I didn't really appreciate the full sense of kind of my selfishness. And it's one of those things, you don't believe it until you see it. And then you do, and it blew my mind. So that's the most poignant memory I have of experiencing a massive anger in combination with gratitude for everything my father had done for me. It washed away a lot of conflict that we'd experienced in our relationship up till then.
Welcome to the Gratitude Podcast on www.georgianbenta.com, where you'll hear a new story each week that will inspire more gratitude in your own life. Our mission is to inspire 100,000 people to discover how to feel gratitude and live a happy life through the amazing life stories of our successful guests and their actionable tips. And now, the host of our podcast, Georgian Benta.
Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Today with us, we have Deepak Shukla. He is the founder of the SEO agency Pearl Lemon, and he has done some really cool things in his life. Some of them weren't that easy, and we're going to go into that, how he managed to overcome them, like being homeless for a week or running a 27-hour ultra marathon. And I'm really curious where this discussion will lead, and I'm sure that he will bring a lot of value to you, the listener. So welcome, Deepak. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Georgian, I'm super excited to be here. Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. I'm looking forward to talking about, you know, some, many, or any of those things that you just mentioned.
Amazing, amazing. So we had a good laugh about how you like to talk about your name, the fact that it's like half the name of Tupac Shakur.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the funny thing is, Georgian. So you know, Georgian was, of course, before we came on, asking exactly how to pronounce my name, which is normal. People sometimes are like, how do I pronounce it? And the interesting part, Deepak, of course, sounds a lot like Tupac. And then people are like, oh, I get it. And, you know, I still have my nose pierced. Tupac had his nose pierced. And then I tried to have a budding career as a rapper when I was like in my early 20s. So it's really funny how life has worked out. They're like, oh, but yes, Deepak is perfect. And it is very similar to Tupac.
Yeah. And a thing that I forgot to mention, maybe we can go into that as well, is the fact that at one point you were featured as a BBC Artist of the Month as a rapper, right?
Yeah, so I was with.
And also, your parents didn't know about Tupac Shakur.
My parents moved to India, moved from India in their early teens. My mum was 11, my dad was like 15, and they haven't had really a formal education. And they had no idea, is what I'm saying, who Tupac was. It was just, and in Hindi, you'd pronounce it Deepak, which means to bring light. And in English, it translates phonetically, D-E-E-P-A-K. In Hindi, it'd say Deepak, just like I'm sure Georgian is my terrible English pronunciation of how perhaps your family call your name.
It's good. Don't worry.
Okay. Brilliant.
So my first question, what is gratitude for you personally?
It's a really excellent question. I think gratitude for me, really is, it's a powerful tool. It's a tool that helps me do more things in my life. Because sometimes, or quite often, I'm in situations where I feel perhaps overwhelmed or overcome by things, and how gratitude serves me in those moments is by recognizing what it is I have that I can be grateful for, and how I already have all of the answers. I think a lot of the time, you know, it's easy for all of us, including myself, right? I say this and I include myself in it, to become overwhelmed, like something happens or something doesn't happen or something changed, and we feel overwhelmed by kind of the entire process. And in those moments, I'm grateful for recognizing that, Deepak, you have all of the answers. Everything's there. You don't need to go kind of outside. You just need to look within. And that recognition of, you know, being grateful for the fact that we all have infinite potential. We all have infinite possibilities is really empowering for me. And that is kind of what, you know, gratitude really is for me. It's quite an inward tool that's helped me, you know, across some of those events that you spoke of.
Yeah. By the way, how do you feel gratitude has helped you when you were homeless, for instance?
It, you know, there's some experiences in life, Georgian, that really level you. So what I say by that is it's very, as humans, I think it's part of our nature, because we seek, you know, we're social animals, we seek approval of some kind, we form part of a society. So that also lends towards us being kind of, for example, ego driven. You know, you get some positive reinforcement from the world, you echo that reinforcement you get to somebody else. Oh, so-and-so said this about me, and isn't that awesome? You know, you might screenshot a conversation, forward it to your friend, or do something like this, or be like, oh, wow, I didn't know that would happen. And going out and doing something like being homeless, or going out and training with, you know, a former special forces operator in Georgia, going into environments where any semblance of standing or recognition or success you've had gets reduced to nothing. God, it teaches you about yourself. And, you know, it teaches you, again, to be grateful for everything that you have that you stop appreciating. But one of the interesting things about that is that, you know, people, we all talk about gratitude a lot, right? And then we kind of very often forget about the things that we should be grateful for that are present in our lives right now. And what's been really powerful with that experience of being homeless was that it reminded me, you know, when I was sleeping in an estate in the south of London, when I saw drug users shooting up, or I'd go to a homeless shelter, or I'd have to get woken up by police officers asking me to move along. And all of these different things happened, was that I need to recreate environments of discomfort more often for myself, because it makes me grateful for the things that I have. So gratitude actually is a muscle, I think, and it's one of the muscles that atrophies faster than ever. And I think the absence of gratitude in your life makes you actually appreciate things less. But what that really means, because I think it becomes very esoteric and abstract, and people, you know, you'll get the naysayers will be like, oh, well, what's gratitude? You know, okay, wow, I'm happy about my life, ha, ha, ha. But then what you'll often find with people that have those levels of dialogue is that they're not really operating to anything close to their potential. I've often found that the people that are the most successful in my life that I've met are the most humble and the most grateful for the tools that they have, because they often put themselves in places of discomfort. And in those moments, again, I go back to when yesterday I was on, you know, the Stairmaster at the gym. So I'm doing these stair climbing nonstop for like 45 minutes and I'm absolutely dying. It's like I've had a shower in the gym and I have not touched the shower at all. I'm dripping, right? And in those moments, I'm grateful for the fact that, Deepak, you have all of the answers. Everything's in here. It's not out there. It reduces you. And that experience of being homeless, that falling away of anything else that was before, anything else that will come after, and just being really in the moment, I feel like, again, it teaches me, it teaches you something. And it teaches you to be grateful for this body, this world, this life. Because you're like, you know what? You've got all of the answers. Be grateful for knowing that. And that for me was what something that being homeless taught me about my life. That it's not about my past. It's not about what I could become. But be grateful for the things that you can do right now, here, in this moment that I have with you, in this time that we share together, in these moments that we have, that, you know, I can be grateful for, to talk about my experiences of gratitude. So it was it really was a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's usually so, one of the things that have been proven scientifically that when it comes to gratitude is the fact that contrast actually makes us feel more grateful. For instance, if we live like, I don't know, with Americans or with people from the UK, and we get to be comfortable with a certain level of abundance, and we go to another country that's poor, we get to understand how much abundance we actually have, because otherwise it's like, well, everyone has these things, it's something normal. You actually look at people that have more and you think, oh my God, he has this or he has that. But when you go there and you see the contrast, it's like, oh my God, I'm so rich, I'm so blessed. Yeah. And I'm really curious about something, and I think that your insight, your perspective can be really unique. You have roots in India.
Yeah.
And you live in the UK.
Yeah.
Have you seen differences, cultural differences in gratitude when it comes to people from India or the UK?
Oh, wow. Fabio, thank you, first of all. Great question. I think that one of the biggest things that I think has been testament to any moderate success that I've had in my life is what I've seen with my parents. I'll tell you a very brief story about my parents. My mum, dad, Sita and Ram, you know, bless them, I love them. They got married, Georgian, at 11 and 13. So the first time they saw each other, they got married. And then they didn't see each other again for 2 years. So here were two young Indian, ultimately economic migrants by the time they came over to the UK. You know, my mum spoke some English. My dad had to learn when he arrived. They suffered issues moving over in the 70s of kind of the typical things of being, you know, an ethnic minority group, being without education. You know, my parents, you know, my dad today still works at Heathrow Airport. You know, my mum still works as a cashier in the supermarket. And one of the things that they ultimately were grateful for, irrespective of any perceived lack of, you know, things, was when you take away things, what's left is, you know, actually opportunity to, you know, for my parents is the opportunity to be here, to be in the UK, to work extremely hard and to do everything that they could, because they were given a sliver of an opportunity to put in the hours necessary to ensure that someone like myself can be on a podcast with you here today, right? Because otherwise it just wouldn't have happened. So my parents kind of, they did the 100-hour work weeks, you know. We're strange in that we'd often have dinners alone or with one parent, not because they were single parents, but when my mum was working, you know, days, my dad would be working nights, because that was how they could swap around babysitting, or my dad would be doing shift work. So there's no sense of kind of togetherness around the family table. Now, what that has taught me and what I see that is symbolic of, or representative of, of the Indians that I know that are native Indians that are born and raised is the attitude towards progress, the attitude towards opportunity, which I think is relatively consistent amongst a lot of developing economies in terms of the work ethic. You know, a lot of people kind of, not a lot of people, but some people perhaps often turn their noses up at, for example, like migrant, you know, the economic migrants. First it was, you know, the Irish that came over, then it was the Caribbeans, then it was, you know, Indians. Now it's, for example, been the Polish. And initially there's always this adjustment where people feel a bit hard done by people coming in and working for less, working more hours. But it's a testament to the amazing work ethic that, you know, I see in the Indian population. And definitely, you know, in my experience with my business, you know, three of the staff members that, you know, we're eight, they're based in India. And Georgian, they're the hardest workers in the room. So it's amazing, and I'm really grateful to have that insight, because it gives me, honestly, it gives me an opportunity to come to the UK and dominate, because I can outwork people because of what I've known. No other reason. And I don't know, but I would contend perhaps it's perhaps similar to some degree in a country such as, you know, your native country, Romania as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's quite interesting. Usually, I've spoken with people from all around the world, actually, from Australia, from the UK, from the States, from Singapore, India, everywhere. So, yeah. And I'm really curious about these things. Like, for instance, the people that I spoke with from the UK are a bit more skeptical when it comes to gratitude. Like, they see it as an American thing, that like a self-development thing or something like this. Usually, not all of them, but many do. And I think it's really interesting to see these perspectives. Like, Indians, I'm sure, have this way of being appreciative of the few things that they have, of the few opportunities that they have.
Absolutely.
And the contrast is with the UK, the people from the UK that have a lot of privileges because they are from the UK, and yeah, they are grateful in a way, but it's a different story. And that was something that I'm really curious about, and I think can be very powerful for instance, the people that are listening that are from the UK, or from people from India that are listening.
Absolutely, Georgian. I completely agree. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's important for me to underline is, this isn't, for me, it's not a criticism of a particular kind of segment of people, population, or kind of thing. What I consider this area that we describe, it's what I call consequences of comfort. Comfort does not breed gratitude. The absence of comfort breeds gratitude, which is why simple people with simple things are more grateful than, you know, happier people with in complex environments and complex needs. And I always feel that that's kind of the inverse correlation. So the consequence of comfort for anybody, it leads to oftentimes an absence of gratitude, and also that's why I've sought to go out and continually reinforce that muscle. Because when you're out doing a triathlon and you're busting your gut up a hill, it's you and the hill. There's nothing else. Everything else, all of the noise of life, it kind of fades away, and it's such a powerful thing. You know, for me, it's like meditation, and it allows me to become more powerful in the other spaces of my life, because you can take that mindset and you can take it into the work environment, where most people, you know, don't put themselves in places where there's an absence of comfort.
That's really interesting. I was thinking about, for instance, when it's really cold outside and we get back home and it's really cozy and it's really warm and it's really awesome, or the opposite. If it's really hot outside and we have air conditioning at home, it's like, oh my God, at last yep. I can feel okay. I can feel good. And if we spend maybe 1 hour or two in that comfort zone, it's like, it's something normal. It's nothing to appreciate here, right? I really think it's an interesting perspective, and it correlates quite good with the perspective with the Indians and the people from the UK. The fact that when we are too much in our comfort zone,
yeah,
we tend to forget to appreciate these things that we have and maybe others don't.
Yeah.
But we're just not aware of them anymore. And I think it's important to get back. And one of the things that I am doing with the podcast is this too. Even though I'm in a poorer country and in a developing country, I can still find reasons to feel grateful, even though I don't live at the standards that people from the UK or from the States live, yeah. You know? And yeah. I think this can be really powerful, and I'm hoping that this will inspire people from there to have a different perspective. Yeah,
absolutely, Georgian. I agree. I think that, you know, listeners, we all have the opportunity to be powerful in our own lives, and the act of practicing gratitude also allows. I think it enables you to recognize what you have, and therefore go out and work with what you have. Certainly, you know, that's what has worked for me, that actually what happens is that you peel away excuses. It's very easy to rationalize many things that inhibit action. And, you know, being grateful for what you have versus what you don't have, often the focus is what you can't do or what you know. And when you gratitude really helps me reframe things. It's like, oh, you know, well, I haven't got £5,000 to invest, for example, let's say in an opportunity or something. You know, instead the question should be, well, you know, well, here is what I have. I'm, you know, how can I make things happen with what I have? And that really comes from, first of all, recognizing what you do have. And that only comes actually from being grateful for what you do have, because otherwise the focus is on the kind of, you know, what's missing from our lives. And when you take away everything, then that one thing, which in this case, for example, you know, the Slavic, you know, the Baltic region, like Wi-Fi is so much more in advance, for example, of what we have even in the UK. And you can change the world with an Ethernet connection if you so choose to. But people, of course, focus on the absence of, oh, well, you know, I'm Indian, so people are going to associate me with an Indian SEO agency, and they're going to be like, Deepak, I want to pay $300 a month, or, oh, you know, and all of these excuses that we wrap ourselves around in. And you know, I totally agree that, you know, if in practicing gratitude and being open to it, it then allows you to take that next step of becoming resourceful and recognizing, you know, what you do have and how far you can go with what you have.
Exactly. And this is actually what I'm doing. Like, what one of the resources that I do have is a great internet connection, and an even better one than many places around the world. So I'm doing the best I can with that, and I'm reaching people around the world, even though I'm not in the States or in the UK or something like that. So,
well, you know, Georgian, thank you so much for doing what you do, because I think that, you know, the world needs more people that go out and act and operate from a position of gratitude, because otherwise, you know, my PR manager, Mattia, would not have looked at your podcast and said, you know, Deepak, have a listen. And I wouldn't have, you know, I would not have listened otherwise had you not put it out there. And I would not have then said, okay, Mattia, let's approach Georgian and just see what happens, because this is some really interesting stuff. And, you know, I'm also thankful for that, Matt. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I'm hoping that people will see this and they will get inspired to use their own resources. And I wanted to point out something. Like when I was talking about people from the UK or from the States, the fact that they they have it better somehow from some points of view. I wasn't saying that to shame anyone, but to actually become aware, like the fact that you have some blessings that other people might not, and you can do things that that the other people that aren't from the US or from the UK cannot. And I think that, this is very important to see and to be grateful for, and to use in a way that's positive and that's bringing a positive change in the world. And I think that can be really powerful once you understand that, and you don't focus so much on the fact that you have to keep up with the Joneses or something like this.
Absolutely. Georgian, I completely agree. And you know, in the recognition of, you know, the tools that we have access to, for whatever reasons we have access to those, whether it's birthright or heritage or citizenship or religion or, you know, whatever, finance, socioeconomic status, like, you know, if you activate all of the opportunities that, you know, you have within yourself because of all of those things, rather than looking at it as a lack, oh, you know, well, we don't have this, or, oh, you know, I could complain, for example, that we're having a really hot summer and British homes don't have air conditioning, so I'm sweating my ass off talking to you. And it's like, you know, it is what it is. Be grateful for the fact that we're having a hot summer. And I, hey, listen, man, I agree, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So what I also wanted to find out is, when did you first experience gratitude? There is a lot of talk about gratitude, and I'm really curious to know how you got to experience it firsthand and to actually feel it and understand it.
My first poignant memory actually was when I was 18 years old. So as I was saying, I'm coming up to 32. So this would have been in like 2004, I think it was. And I was backpacking. I had just finished kind of school before I went to university. I decided that it was about time that I went to my homeland as part of my trip. So I did a 6-month trip kind of around the world. And the first stop was to go to the village, Samorda. Well, no, sorry, it was Busti we went to. There's village of my father and my mother. So I went ultimately to a little village called Samorda, which is in North India, in the state of Uttar Pradesh, where the same state of New Delhi. And I did go with my father at that time to go and see the village where he'd grown up. And Georgian, that blew my mind. I saw what I'd only been used to seeing in these kind of aid adverts about help, you know, a child in a developing economy. There was no electricity. There were corrugated kind of roofs, almost like the radiators you see in some homes that were used for roofs. There were in some places there were no doors and no windows to the homes. It was all kind of subsistence farming, so there was no commercial activity. It was just you grow stuff, you eat the stuff you grow, and you survive. And you know, kids would be running around. Everyone's kind of, a lot of people were barefooted. School was, you know, the elder lady in the village sitting down and taking them through some stuff. Of course, there was no internet. That was the first time I experienced upset about the lack of gratitude I had in my life, actually. I was more upset with myself than I was with them because they were so happy. And I thought, I said a lot of swear words to myself about myself because I was sometimes short, rude, dismissive, childish, immature with my father, who came out with me for those few weeks. And once I saw where he'd come from, because this was his village, he moved when he was 15. And at that time he was, you know, in his 40s or something. So I thought, Jesus, and you were here 20 years before I even got to this place. And this is where he was raised. And yeah, even now looking back on it, it taught me a lot about gratitude, because I didn't really appreciate the full sense of kind of my selfishness. And it's one of those things, you don't believe it until you see it. And then you do, and it blew my mind. So that was, that's the most poignant memory I have of experiencing a massive anger in combination with gratitude for everything my father had done for me. It washed away a lot of conflict that we'd experienced in our relationship up till then.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. And how was it when you came back? I'm really curious. How did you see the world that you were living in?
Yeah, it was like a boot camp. It was like it's like I'd been unbrainwashed. It was like I saw a world for, I saw things that I'd never seen before that had always been there. So it felt like I maybe had been walking through life with cataracts, and I'd had them kind of surgically removed a little bit. And it, you know, definitely was a moment where I began ultimately a trajectory of being more proactive and not waiting for the world to come to me, but for me to go out to the world and think, Deepak, what are you complaining about? So you have to get the bus. So what? So you have to, you know, wait an extra 20 minutes. So what? So you have to, you know, walk down the high street to go and get a carton of milk because the local corner shop is closed. So what? A lot of these micro actions, if that makes sense, just small things, not discernible probably to anyone outwardly, but the change began inwardly when I was in that village with my father. And, you know, I had the operation, the cataracts came away. And there was that combination of being in an environment that wants to slide the filters back onto your eyes. It wants to do it because it happens to us all. And then you're constantly trying to push it away. And you know, time plays its part, and over time it kind of comes back and it goes away. And that's also why it became so important to me to go out and seek reminders. So yeah, it was strange coming back. It was enlightening. But it also made me cognizant to the fact that, Deepak, you will forget this. You need to go out and make sure that you remember. Don't rely upon your memory. That's the worst thing to rely upon.
That's so true. It's how our brain works. Like, we forget. We even, like I said, with the example, with getting back from a hot summer day and getting back to the home or to a building that has air conditioning, you get to a comfort zone, and afterwards it's like you forget. It's all good, so you can forget it. And this is how our brain works. So that's why it's important to make a conscious choice. But by the way, you mentioned this, but do you do other things consistently to feel grateful, to be grateful as a habit?
So yeah, no, absolutely. So there's daily rituals. So the daily ritual is, there's a couple. So number one is the act of pain. So pain dealt out through exercise. So that's something that we've already, of course, spoken about, but I'll go on to, I don't know if we spoke about it in the interview or before, but I'll go out onto the Stairmaster, or I'll go out and I'll do something that causes me to sweat like a madman and to really feel like, you know, I'm going to fall off the treadmill, so to speak. In line with that, what happens is I have a playlist that makes me feel grateful about the energy and the strength that I have. It's a playlist that empowers me. One of the songs is called Nicki Minaj, Moment for Life. If I could have this moment for life, that song. So that is a mantra that I'll repeat to myself in moments where I feel overwhelmed. It's like, okay, be grateful, Deepak. You have all of the answers. You have all of the powers. So that's the second mantra that happens when I'm listening, when I'm training, but also outside of training. That's one of three set songs. I'm a hip-hop fan, as you can probably tell by that choice of song. The other song is All I do is win, 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 no matter what. So that is a great mantra for me. It's like, okay, Deepak, you can do it. You can do everything. So they're rituals that I enact. And the other ritual that kind of happens to me is my partner, Daniela, and I, dude, we have a cat, Jenny. Dude, she gives me so much happiness every day for, you know, the most beautiful of reasons that, you know, just her act of living out her life with us and laying, you know, flat on her back. Unlike cats do, cats often lie on their stomach. She lies flat on her back like she's actually sunbathing. And she'll lay sprawled across the floor. She's basically got a lot of dog-like qualities. She'll come and greet us and she'll want to be around us. She doesn't really go out and be away for hours. She'll be out away for an hour maximum and then she'll be back. She's very vocal. She vocalizes meow, meow, and she'll have its own kind of melody. And I'll be like, I don't know what's going on. And there isn't a day where Daniela and I either don't laugh, smile, or share a picture of our cat. So that's something that happens to me rather than, you know, me acting out something. But the amount of like positive energy and gratitude that gives me for, look at this life that we live. You know, we're in a 2-bedroom flat. We're in central London. We have this beautiful cat. And she really reminds me of, or reinforces, that's probably a better word, reinforces the happiness and the gratitude that I have. So I'd say that they're definitely the three things that spring to mind.
Wonderful. I love it. I'm actually a cat person myself. So I can definitely relate. We had several cats as well, and we kept them for a while in a foster, as a foster. And I love the feeling, and I can totally relate. And another thing that I think it's important about the second song that you mentioned with winning.
Yeah.
We actually have a tendency to focus more on our losses. And I think this is very powerful, even if it seems very simple. The fact that we actually win a lot in life, we do many good things, but when we do something bad or when something doesn't happen the way we wanted it to, it's like, oh my God, I'm such a loser. I'm such a, I don't know, all kinds of things of this nature. And I think it's a really powerful enforcing song because it reminds it that you're actually winning even though you sometimes lose. Like it's normal, but you're actually a winner even if you sometimes lose, right?
Oh, Georgian, 100%. It was purposeful that, you know, I chose that song with those lyrics, specifically for those lyrics, because there's lots of upbeat kind of songs in general. But that those series of words that I repeat, I think mantras become powerful over a period of time. And the consistency is that we fail. And you know, I think that, you know, if we look at it from an evolutionary perspective, we are, you know, we're mammalian creatures that spent, you know, thousands of years fearing death and destruction as we were cavemen. So when you look at, of course, our chemical makeup, we're so much more like loss, fear, risk driven than we are reward driven. And kind of unwiring or rewiring that, it's hard. This is why gratitude is, of course, deserves its own space. Because it's something that people need to come back to. It's something that people need to return to. You can't take kind of a quick pill and then assume like it just doesn't, as we know, it doesn't work. So Georgian, absolutely. I think that it's really important to be cognizant to the fact that, you know, we're mammalians. We were cavemen. We are very much more driven by, you know, the fight or flight response, where, you know, vasodilation happens, more blood flows to, you know, your muscles, you get ready to go, everything else fades away because we're driven by the fear of death or by, and that means, as you said, that it's very much easier to focus on loss, to focus on bad things. It's in line with, you know, the programming that we receive as children. Don't, can't, but, won't, shouldn't, stop, shut up, don't, you know, that whole loop. So it requires repetition to kind of undo that and to remind yourself of that. And the reason why it's really important for me to do it when I'm in moments of pain is because that moment of pain is really similar to the moments of loss I experience every day. And I'm trying to rewire it. I'm trying to recreate the exact environment in which I feel like I want to give up. This is too hard. I quit. I hate it. I'm sorry. And then I put in a song that's like the opposite of everything. All I do is win, win. And you know what? It helps. So I completely agree that, you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, how powerful this fear is and what we can do to try and rewire it. It's a slow and it's steady progress, and it doesn't come without immersion. So I think that that's a big point as well, that you can't listen to a song once or even five times and expect to kind of, hey dude, where's my result? If you know what I mean. And you know, when I did my 27-hour ultra marathon, I listened to one song for 9 hours. For 9 hours of the ultra marathon, I listened to James Arthur, "In My Recovery, I'm a Soldier at War." And that lifted, dude, it kept me going for 9 hours from 11 p.m. up till 8 a.m. through the night when it was pouring with rain in Madeira and I was going through mountains and I was in a very dark moment of my life. And, you know, words are powerful. Music and melody is powerful. And I'm so grateful for musicians and songs like that.
Amazing. Amazing. So we are nearing the end of our time together. And I wanted to ask you, who in your life has influenced you in a positive way for whom you are really grateful?
Now, I don't want to say there's so many if I had to pick one, but I've said that. My mum, because she came to the UK as, you know, a woman in a patriarchal society that was a village in India. Her husband was chosen for her when she was 3 or 4 years old. She came to England. She got married at 11. She was pulled out of school at 14 to become a housewife. She fell pregnant at 15, had my lovely, amazing sisters at 16. She's not ever had a formal education. And you know, she went and worked. She used to work at the airport with my dad. Then she worked at a bowling alley, like clearing a cleaner. She was just kind of working in anything that kind of paid the way. And she's done so much with everything that she's had. And the moment that made me recognize how grateful I should be was she works now at a supermarket called Morrison's here in the UK, right? And then I was trying to say to her, "Mum, let's move to Tesco's. It's a better supermarket. You can get a pay rise. I'll help you with the application, la-da-dee, la-da-da." I had this whole idea in my head of ambition and what ambition should look like and what progress should look like. And she just was like, "Deba, I don't need more money. I'm happy where I am and with what I have." And I was like, "Well, what do you mean? You can get paid more." And she was just like, "Look, you know, I got married to a man I never met when I was 11 years old. The only thing that I cared about then was that he had a mustache, but he didn't because he was 15, but he'd have a mustache, he'd have a smile, and that I could ultimately one day give my kids, you know, an education that I haven't had." She said, "You know, there's five of you. You've all gone to university. I don't need anything else. I don't need anything else. I've lived my dream. And now I want you to live yours." And, you know, I almost get a little bit tearful, dude, thinking about it, because I get frustrated with my mom for all kinds of BS. She doesn't understand how to use a laptop. She has a really old phone and she's struggling with this, or she says stuff that makes no sense or has no logic. And I forget about where she came from. And we forget about the people that our parents are, and that she's on her own journey in life. And she's had her own experiences and upbringing. And that moment, in combination with going to India and seeing where my parents came from, dude, it makes me so grateful for kind of the lessons that my mum's taught me and how it helps me live powerfully in my own life.
Amazing. Amazing. It's such an important reminder, and the way you told the story is really, really touching. Thank you.
Georgian, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. So where can our audience find you? Where can our audience see your work?
Absolutely. So, listeners of Georgian's amazing, amazing podcast. You know, you can find me, look up Deepak Shukla, D-E-E-P-A-K Shukla, S-H-U-K-L-A, Deepak Shukla. Just look me up on Google, you know, YouTube. I've got tons of stuff on YouTube. You can surf and find some of my videos talking about different stuff. And, you know, you can engage with me in whatever manner you're most comfortable with, whether that's my website, the YouTube or anything else. You know, I'd love to talk to you about this subject and for you to get in touch with me. It'd be absolutely amazing.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here with us and for sharing so many amazing stories. Thank you.
Georgian, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our weekly podcast. Help us reach our goal of inspiring 100,000 people by sharing this podcast with your loved ones, with your Facebook friends. And if you loved this episode, please write a review on iTunes.